You can do it. The time is now. Let's get to it. Just believe. Just believe. Just believe.
In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents the authentically entertaining voice of truth and inspiration. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with the always unforgettable, ever insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real life journeys, as we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves and the world in which we live. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. Good for all and all for good. And now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Talk about changing the world and changing one's mind, or one can say blowing one's mind. This is Filippo Voltaggio coming to you live from a home in Malibu. It's the home of our guest. And I have been told over and over again, we left the studio today at the insistence of many. many of my friends, many have tried to describe what I would find in this home. And I have heard this story over and over again. And let me tell you, when I told them that, yes, I've heard about our guest's home, they needed to tell me themselves in their own words, oh, but did they tell you about this? And did they tell you about that? So I needed to come and experience for myself. And let me tell you, even though I personally have heard it many times, none of the times, or all of the times combined, could prepare me for what I have seen so far. And I know that there is more that I will be seeing after the show, and more that hasn't even been created yet. So with that, our guest tonight, he is an artist, decidedly so, in probably all sense of the words. He's an author, an actor, and a visual philosopher. I like that word. That's very accurate for what I've experienced. But more so, he's a Renaissance man. And I think that word actually captures it all. You would recognize him if you saw him. As a matter of fact, we're videotaping this so that we can post it and you all could see, because he's been on so many shows. And tonight, he's on Life Changes with Filippo. Our guest is Lee McCloskey, and we'll be back here right after this with Lee McCloskey himself in his own home.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWay's ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWay's ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. And ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWay's water systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWay's water systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We're back, and as I mentioned, we're in the home of our guest, Lee McCloskey, in beautiful Malibu, California. You know, I have actually done a few things myself. One of the things that I've done is I've hosted a few pageants, actually several pageants. Of course, lady pageants and beautiful women pageants, of course. However, I have hosted a few Mr. Romance pageants. For the ladies. And so I remember one particular event where I was the host that evening, but during the day, there was somebody else that was hosting. I was doing the master ceremonies for the main event. And this man that was hosting, there were about 1,500 women in the audience, and this was in Canada. And the man that was hosting said something to the ladies about the men who probably happen to be some of the most handsome and attractive and muscular whatever men. These are men that would win the cover of a romance novel if they should win the competition, and so, or the pageant. So he said, ladies, in a few minutes you'll see some of the most handsome men in the world, and all the women applauded and hooted and hollered. And then he said something like, of course, they're as dumb as something or other. And I don't remember what it was. And they all laughed and they hooted and hollered just the same, as if they didn't care about that. And I actually was a little offended, because actually having been a part of this event, I knew some of the men, and I knew that some of them had really big hearts, really kind people, and some of them were really intelligent. Yes, there were some that didn't seem to have intelligence. I'm sure they had other qualities that I didn't get to know, but it was interesting how it seemed like it was taken for granted that if a man was that handsome, that it was that he was probably non-intelligent, and that was probably okay for them. And I thought, and I'm thinking now, as I was getting ready, preparing for our guest tonight, he was considered one of the most handsome men. Of course, on Dallas, he was, as some would say, he's the man that you'd want to see on the cake, on the top of the wedding cake, as the model with the bride. And as a matter of fact, his wedding on Dallas was seen by more people than probably any, maybe not as much as Diana and Charles, but probably along that line. So if our consciousness is that if he's on Dallas, as a matter of fact, our guest has done so many soap operas, if he's on a soap, or if he's modeling, or if he's that handsome, he's probably not intelligent. And I'm thinking we're cutting each other off more and more the more we do this. Perhaps if we suspended our belief about somebody, if we no longer accept that people are just one thing or two things, or if we allow for the possibility that we are more than we actually seem to our eye or to our ears, then maybe we all could be more for each ourselves and each other. And so I have come to find in Lee, who I knew about his acting, and who I knew about the salons that he did, and it all sounded very interesting, and I knew about the books, but to come and experience the depth and the brilliance that he brings forth in his art, and in other ways of expressing himself, my hat's off to this truly new Renaissance man, our guest, Lee McCloskey.
Thank you very much. That's a wonderful introduction.
Well, thank you for inviting us into your home, almost insisting. I know many times you have invited me yourself, and I just didn't understand. And so not that everybody will understand or that everybody will be able to come here, but what is this?
Well, going back to the introduction and the story of Dallas and my acting career and being thought of in one light and seen in the ways you talk about, I realize that you can't walk up to someone and say, oh, guess what? Actually, I'm really quite bright. As a matter of fact, if you do, you either sound arrogant, or if you have to say that to someone, you sound rather silly. Mm. So what I found was that part of what this is the understanding that in the outer world we make certain agreements. There are certain assumptions made about us. There are certain things that we agree to. But I found that I needed to create a counterweight to Hollywood. In other words, that I felt that Hollywood, I was very fortunate because I was able to act. I was able to...
And you're still acting.
Yeah, I'm still acting. Yeah. And it's acted as a very wonderful patron. But I was, for some strange reason, always aware that it was a gift. It wasn't something I was entitled to, nor was it something I needed to over-identify with. It became much more of a patron, meaning that it really freed me to, as with the house we're in. This was when I was doing Dallas. We were able to move out here. And I began having discussion groups in my home 33 years ago when we moved out here. And I took a page from Ralph Waldo Emerson and the American Transcendentalists. And that sense that what we find is when something's missing from the conversation, that we can create the environment where we can have the conversation. And if it's interesting enough, maybe over a certain period of time, it will be cultivated into something we can bring back into the world. But we must have the conversation. We must create residence for these ideas. And so many of the ideas that I was profoundly moved by, I realized created confusion from the frame of reference where I would appear as an actor. I had a manager at one time who said, Lee, people want you to look like you and be like them. And I started to understand, and then I ended up doing the Max Factor California for Men fragrances. But these taught me. It wasn't like, oh, this is... It was saying, no. This is why the Renaissance model, we'll get back to that as well, is that sense of these are different languages, different expectations, but they don't define one. They create the circumstances where one must become self-defining, not by being against what's going on there, but actually what can I cultivate where I am?
And so this
is
a part of you as well.
Yes.
It's all a part of you.
Yes, yeah. Because it's the examined life. It's being given that and that sense of, it's fascinating to see the values of celebrity, what the culture thinks it's desiring, what if I had that, and to really find that is like any other thing, a facade. One will feel just as empty with that recognition from others if there is not something behind the mask. And this I realized, but I realized it wasn't something that profession would fill in for me. It was what that profession allowed me to fill in for myself.
Hmm. Well, I know that you studied at Juilliard. As a matter of fact, can we say this? You roomed with somebody that's...
Yes. Yeah. Very famous classmates and roommates. Yes, Kelsey Grammer. Dear Kelsey, yeah.
But you, at Juilliard, you picked up music. I mean, and while you were studying acting, and so even in your acting, this isn't, you know, hey, he looks good, let's put him in the movies. I mean, you studied acting.
I did, well, because
at Juilliard.
I never felt that I was never really aware of myself and how I looked because I had a very powerful inner life. So for me, there was almost a strange disconnect in how I looked as well. I was very, very inward and withdrawn, you know, because I really wasn't stepping into that part of my genetics, I guess. But when I was at Juilliard, what I found was there was in a way an emergence process, because my father, who was a painter, he would always say, use the tools of creativity to ask questions with. When you can't talk about something, paint it. And I was having trouble with a character when I was at Juilliard, trying to connect with the violence of a character. And I saw a calligrapher talk about breath, about gesture, about emotional connection. And so I started experimenting with breath, with gesture, not to be an artist, but to connect with tangible application with my own energies. You know, because I felt that we become very sort of immured in our own energy body. You know, how do we break free of that? But I realized now that I was actually starting with a much more indigenous approach, or a much more Eastern approach, which was form follows energy, not theory. You know, and in the West, we're usually trying to illustrate something we think we need to teach someone else. And this is saying, no, 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 the energies are actually the mentoring. And what you are doing, like an actor, is getting out of the way of these energies. This was really the ancient Chinese way of painting. Wow. You know, it was all about the sense of embodiment and connection. This is why I feel with painters, I say, well, take acting. Start embodying. Start. Don't paint a painting of something. Feel, embody that character and paint as that character. This is why my archetypes, my work on the tarot, was not about illustrating something I thought I knew, but much more from this, what I had learned going back to Juilliard, of embodiment, using art as a tool of connection and tonal connection. And then with music and the piano, Juilliard had these wonderful practice rooms where no one could hear you. You could either shout at the top of your lungs with how many times you wanted to do, or you could go in and plunk out the piano, trying to, you know, and thank God it's a soundproof room. I mean, Juilliard, there are awfully talented musicians around here. But I found that, a bit like my art, my improvisation, because I've stuck with it over the years, that the piano talking, you know, rather than it being notes and theory, I just kept playing. I'm sort of a man that maybe was, you know, on an island somewhere with a piano, a sketch pad, and, you know, without the overlay of you must do it this way. And I really did feel that I understood the agreement of an actor and a professional life in Hollywood and film and all of that. And so I never worried about the identity of being an artist or being a musician, and I could simply use those as tools of inquiry.
Wow.
So, who to thunk, really?
And so you have.
Yes.
And who can think in this place? This can't be thought up. And I'd like to ask you when we come back, since you can't think this, what is going on while you're doing this? So when we come back, I can't imagine. So we're talking to our guest, Lee McCloskey, in his home, which, by the way, he calls Olander. And when we come back, we'll tell you how you could learn more about our guests here on Life Changes with Filippo.
Are you like many people who want to make positive changes and improvements in your life and in the world around you? Do you ever feel like there's something holding you back from achieving your true potential? Join Stefan and Shaylee Schifeidel with the Tad James Company, the world's largest NLP, coaching, timeline therapy, and hypnotherapy training institute. Get ready for a life-changing experience that will give you the tools to transform your life through positive change and will help you create the future you want now. Their training programs are designed to provide you with the revolutionary knowledge, skills, and techniques necessary to effectively create long-lasting and life-changing effects. Discover more about neuro-linguistic programming and timeline therapy at www.nlpcoaching.com or call 888-440-4823. That's 888-440-4823. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens, on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
Well, speaking about life changes, this is Filippo here on Life Changes with Filippo, and I'm live with Lee McCloskey in his home, and I'm having a life-changing moment in the sense of I'm thinking of something that I've never really thought before. Now, I have many friends who are models, both male and female, and I mention models and actors because there's an aesthetic in Hollywood that is looked for, that is that we see a lot on television, right? Especially in the youth and all that. So I never thought about it this way. And Lee, I'd like your opinion, especially knowing that you were so introspective and so deep inside. I grew up unattractive, and so when somebody took a liking to me, I thought they'd see the beauty inside of me, and then I found out that it was somebody who felt sorry for me. And I wonder, so there was that letdown. It's like, oh, they don't see me, they just feel sorry for me. I wonder if in your case, almost the same thing happened where someone would take an interest in you and then you would realize it's about the external beauty and they don't see you.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is that moment?
Well, I think that's it's a disappointment because, as you put it, that you really hope that someone will see this inner radiance, this inner sense of worthiness, of humanity, and it really is either reflecting, as you say, either with sympathy, which is just a mere reflection of the other person, or that sense of, I'm sorry, you got way too much going on. I don't understand how to deal with this. And I think that disappointment, in a way, though, over life and in life, teaches us to begin to discern that many of the sorrows, many of the difficulties aren't what those things that can be shared. They can't be discovered through the lens of another. And so it becomes a gift as you get older to understand how all of the different ways people see and what they expect and the assumptions they make. If you see that as a gathering of, oh, I get it now. Mm. I realize that they were never given permission to see beyond the surface. Mm. Do you know, they really are in a way believing these things, and maybe over the long time or in life, there will be a moment for each of the individuals that judged or discerned on that level, sort of an aha moment. But for me, those are mentors in our lives that are saying, you see, it's pulling you away from anticipation or acceptance as an external thing, and it's forcing you to find acceptance as an internal thing.
Wow.
And for me, I think the stronger your inner life is, the more you realize you're not going to find resolution for it in the passing values of the changing days.
Of outside.
Yeah.
From other people, even. However, I trust that through these kinds of conversations that other people can look for that deeper meaning. So, one doesn't have to look very far or hard to find or to know that there's deeper meaning here. First of all, how did it start?
The room began, the painted cave, as I call it, the hieroglyph of the human soul, which announced itself on 9/11 when the towers came down.
And that's when this started.
That's when this began. It's a creative epiphany. And I realized, because the great gift I've been given as an actor is when the idea is more interesting than you thought, get out of the way of the idea. Mm. Allow yourself to go with the idea. And this is the basis of improvisation. Yes, and. So the collapse on 9/11 for me, I realized, was really that collapsing into a sense of despair. As humans, we have come so far, and this is the best we can do. This is the most we can make out of all of this possibility. We're just going to turn toward despair and violence to determine our future. And in that collapse on 9/11, and I think this is a very important moment, because a language called the Watcher language, which is essentially a type of rhythmic weave that occurs, and I'm following it very much like a musical improvisation, not thinking it's going to become an entire room. Even I know that would be insane. Which is, you know, it's an idea, a bit like my work on the tarot. I never thought I would create 22 drawings, write a book, and end up really cultivating these things. But I realized that to a great degree, once an idea is triggered imaginatively within me, it pushes through me, and I go on that adventure. And that's why this room over the last 12 years has been evolving into this painted environment that, as you saw with the 3D glasses, becomes multidimensional.
Right.
But it's fixed. It's fixed multidimensional. It's not moving 3D. It's not a computer creating it for us. It's actually created a stability now. And that's very important, because this is a technology. And if we think about theater comes from the mysteries. Because the question was, how can we create a story? Realize that they are not just one thing, but they're all these relationships. And how can we maintain at the same time? Let's tell a good story. That's why I feel that over the years, as a cave painter, you know, I'm a cave painter now, I realize that this has been emerging, creating a fixed cave environment, meaning that none of the form has been dissolved by the greater imagination, but there's a new relationship of the imaginative and the formal. And I think the 9/11 collapse, essentially, is where we're returning home. We have to make sense of being human. That speaks to the intimate human heart, not the one that says, I'm going to tell you what's wrong. Because think about the metaphor here. I'm not telling the neighbor his politics are wrong. I'm saying, like Noah, at least let me make sense of being human in a way that I can share with my daughters that says maybe being human is a heroic act, not a miserable act of condemnation.
Wow. Well, let me describe, and again, as my friends and associates and colleagues tried, there is no way to describe. But I will say this at least, just briefly on air for those who can't see it. There, the whole floor is painted with an amazing painting, but not just the floor, the walls, the ceilings, and the ceilings are painted, and on top of the painted ceiling are paintings that are hanging along from the rafters along the wall. But the most, let me tell you, the bookshelves are painted, and the books on the shelves are painted, and with colors, and but more so than colors, with imagery and with deity and humanity and a story. There's a story that Lee started to describe to me, and then he asked me to put on 3D glasses. And evidently, he didn't know this when he was painting, but the whole room came alive in a completely different way. And truly, I've heard this described before, but I've never experienced, the ceiling, the floors and the ceilings disappear.
Yeah. They become fixed multidimensionality. And if you think of that as a technology, meaning that why, and this relates, this, now you must understand, for 33 years I've had study groups here as well, looking at Eastern and Western tradition, theosophy for 25 years. So there's a lot of study, there's a lot of depth in the story, I think, that's been able to develop here.
Mm. It's almost like the walls have absorbed it and are telling you.
Because, and it's a library. That's key, because we think of a painted, that on 9/11, we've gone out into the world for a, we live. And as human, we were taught, it's not you, it's not here, it's later, it's them, it's down the road. So we had a sense of we'll get there. And from 9/11 onward, there's been that sense of we're not going anywhere. It's just getting harder and harder and harder. There's no sense of movement toward, or where we're moving toward seems rather dark. And I really feel like this is why it's saying, when you look at alchemy, there's what's known as fixity and volatility, meaning that there's that which is and that which needs to be fixed. And during the 20th century, how we are always in motion, the mind is always being led. If you go to a 3D film, you're being led on that. You're not in charge of it. It's in charge of you. You're being swept away. And when we think about memory problems, ADD, why people can't concentrate, is that we understood in ancient times that you need fixed environment. Meaning that why Stonehenge was fixed, why the cathedral was fixed, why the labyrinth was fixed, was it was saying that when you enter these ancient sacred spaces, you are reminded that you are an ancient being. And this is what the DNA reveals to us now. We don't wear a temporal weave. We wear a weave that is the outcome of the entire story of humankind. Mm-hmm. And that's why the fixed site was so important, because it said, now trust. If Philippe walks in to Stonehenge, and you go to a certain stone, and I'm attracted to another stone there, it wasn't, I'm right and you're wrong. Mm. It was, we trusted that the universe, like an artist, saying that Michelangelo isn't right and Van Gogh was wrong. Mm. But there's a unique beauty to this story, so you would be attracted to one relationship, I to another. And a bit like the improvisation of musicians, we would start to sing with a type of scintillating truth about creation, meaning that it's not something fixed, it's not a law, it's not something done, it's something that goes through ages of transition and change, like the budding of a flower, but finally from this bud it begins to blossom, it begins to open, which if we think of energetically is a shift in our own energy body. And for me, this was what happened. My work on the tarot was very much journeying, digging through the soil, you know, the sense of finding the direction. But then the room on 9/11, when this begins, it begins to blossom, meaning the story isn't to convince others, it's not to worry about the art world, it's not to be this or to be that, it's how do we live? Mm. At least where I live, let me remind myself of the worthiness of this story. Because when I'm in a library, I realize we humans, for all the difficulty, are a truly heroic species. And that, I think, will transform everything.
You know, I feel a sense from you, and I got this when I first met you, that you are you. And it's a beautiful you. And so on the one hand, you have no reason to apologize. However, it's unapologetically you. And when we come back, I'd like to explore that, because to me, what I'm experiencing in your space is you, and uniquely you, and this is where some of the most, like the Watts Towers, people must have thought he was crazy, and I'm sure they told, you know, so let's talk about that when we come back. I actually have a word I want to use, and let's explore that, because so few people ever experience their self in their lifetime, at least from what I gather. We're talking with Lee McCloskey. We're doing more than talking. I feel like we're having experience after experience, as I am floating on ocean and goddesses and gods. And if you want to learn more about Lee's work, go to www.leemccloskey.com. And if you can spell, well, I can spell it. It's LeighMcC again, LoskeY.com, LeighMcCloskey.com, kind of like it sounds. We'll be back on Life Changes with Filippo right after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen. And the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, "I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up." A second grader named Chandler said, "I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life." And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, "This is a great story. Bravo, Shadow." The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook, and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We're back, although where back is, I don't know for sure, but we're here. And there again, you know, where is here?
Said Alice.
But at the moment, my butt is sitting in Malibu, California, in a chair in a place called Olandar.
Olandar, yes.
Which is the name that our guest, Lee McCloskey, gives to this this home, this experience that he's created. Now, you know, as a life coach, I had a client this morning who was saying to me, well, I can't do that because I don't have the credentials. You know, so-and-so could do it because they're a psychologist and they have the credentials. And I said, do it as you.
Yes.
And it was a concept that was so foreign for him. And I say, you will speak as you to the people who will resonate with your you-ness. Mm-hmm. And he was this smile started coming over his face, like he started to understand that there's meaning to himness.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely. And so... And he was afraid of what people might say. Oh, he doesn't have credentials. Well, you. Now, some people might come in here and say, this is crazy. Like, he's totally lost it. And you're the most sane. I mean, but yet you didn't care, or you didn't think, or did you not think the neighbors would think something?
That's why this is in private space, intimate space. The key I live by is you must understand there are different assumptions and different expectations in different areas of the world and our relationship there. I really feel that here we're seeing this really remarkable story of the psyche played out. But you must understand that this has been the place where we've explored the nature of the psyche. But essentially with, as I like to put it, the actor's motto, which is the suspension of disbelief, rather than let me discover the belief I need to hold, and that will be the key. Rather, it was this sense of let me continue to explore the nature of these stories. And what's happened over the period of time, I really believe, is that it says, listen, the human psyche is like the house. That the question has not been, oh, it's just getting to this room. It's not just ascending into this living library, this painted cave, where it seems like madness is so beautiful, it makes sense somehow. Like Stravinsky's Rite of Spring sounded absolutely insane. But now it's like, of course, but we needed to adapt, because this is one of the things that when we understand that, what are we woven of? Creation. How do we enter this world? Creation. What is art? It is the language of creation. So we can only know ourselves through art, through creation, through spontaneity. Mm-hmm. And when we think of the home as metaphor, it says you had to learn the room, the children's room, the bedroom, the kitchen, the living room, meaning as a human being, we have to speak all of those languages. Right. And then we have the downstairs here, and we see the relationship where my tarot is downstairs, and I designed this room for my father, so it's the sunroom designed for the father. And then mythically, we ascend upstairs to this room, and we have the living library. But I'm convinced that the larger story is it's saying it's not just to ascend to these great ideas. It's to realize through all of these difficult conversations, not the inspiring ones, the difficult ones, not the ones where you figure it out, but you go through the trouble, you go through the difficulty. Think of figuring out how to navigate the domestic story. How do we get along together? Navigating the professional story. How on earth am I going to pay my bills? You know, these are really concerns that I believe if we think of them not as victims, but we say maybe they've been establishing the foundation that will finally let us lift into a space like this house where we can assimilate what might seem mad, but in a certain way, it's almost like the world of form saying, you've studied enough. You know these things so well. Take the training wheels off. Trust yourself a bit more. And guess what? You're at home in this metaphor. So close the door. If you're too embarrassed to share it with the neighbor, don't share it with the neighbor. Share it with those that care about these things. That's why my tarot work is so good. I shared it with people that cared, rather than trying to convince people why they should care.
And maybe the people that don't care have a different belief that you might not care about.
Exactly. And so we're being taught to be wise gardeners. Don't grow a garden to convince your neighbor he's wrong. Mm. Grow a garden to nourish your family. Mm. And grow a conversation that nourishes those around you. Wow. Because we change the world with enthusiasm.
with a sense that we're more interesting than we think. And if it takes a little madness to drive us over the edge, a little letting the door off the hinges for a while, then let's do it.
Let's do it. Well, I think you've done it. And, yes. And I don't think you're done, because I saw outside, I actually have to share this. So the sliding glass door is painted as well. And so is the porch and the walls of the porch and the fence around the porch. And it's not done yet, I see.
No, it's so, on growing.
But speaking of the metaphor, as powerful as all of this is, and it is, and it's even more powerful than I even comprehend at the moment, one of the moments that was most powerful when I got the mini tour, when I got here, was I've been on a lot of movie sets and TV sets, and everything is fake. So I assumed that the books on the wall, on the bookshelf, not necessarily that they were fake, I knew they were real books, but I thought maybe you went out and bought a bunch of books that you didn't care about and put them up there and painted over. Or I thought maybe they were books that were there before, but you don't really use them. And at one point, the painting was what it was over all the books. And then you pulled one book out of the bookshelf, out of the painting, and you opened it up as a working book and talked about something in the book. And I, at that moment, something came to me as if maybe I'm a book.
Yes, you're getting it.
A working book.
There you go.
Part of a bigger painting.
There you go. That's absolutely, you're right onto it. Because think of this sense of the book, the spine, the name. We see in a library, when we open a book, we take a unique adventure. We understand human in a unique context. But when we see a library, we begin to see how they are next to each other, standing spine to spine, saying that the vision of being human isn't just one of these, but it's all of these stories. And that's why I've been fascinated. My friends really that did think I was going crazy early on, because I was I'm a bibliophile. I mean, so I was painting books that oh my God, he's really, but
you've got some famous expensive books up there
What's interesting is that what I pulled out over I showed you the chalice, the grail, which is something that, again, I'm not illustrating anything. That's what's so interesting here. It's more of the sense of gathering, a sense of discovery. In the same way that you can't figure out how to play a character, you have to throw things into the crucible, you have to study. And then over a period of osmosis, it starts to, in a sense, gel, and it starts to inform you, not because you figured it out, but a bit like learning a dance step. Suddenly the body knows it, and you're free to dance finally, rather than going, what's this tangle? You know, we finally let the energy through us. And what's so extraordinary here is everything that has been painted over, all of the books, tell a story. And they are practical, meaning that art has not made, and because usually we think as soon as it becomes art, it's no longer usable. Mm. And what I love is this is actually saying, no, guess what? This is saying it can hold more than one implication. It can be itself. You can be, as you say, a unique book. But when you realize, no, you're part of the living library. Therefore, your spine with my spine is actually cultivating a greater beauty of what does it mean to be human, not just a human, but human. And that the question couldn't be asked by one of us, because we're an embodied theater company saying any good idea has to be examined from all of these perspectives. And if we understood that we're examining not our own self-reference, but our self-reference is actually how we're carrying humanity, then we realize how we've been created, like the books, to carry not simply the formal sense of our own life journey, but to realize, because if you think about the spine, we can't see behind us. We almost don't see what our weave in the greater story is. But, you know, that's where, of course, we need It's a Wonderful Life to remind us. You see, if you had not been here, because we do, we feel like, oh, well, what's the point? And that's why this is intimate space as well. I think that's why this had to be domestic space. It has to be painted on linoleum in a ranch-style house. Do you know? In other words, it's not the vaulted surface of things. It is actually saying that you are what transforms linoleum into beauty.
Wow.
It's your assumptions that allow your surface to carry more of a implication. But you must do it. Can you hold something that you can't see? Can you hold something that you feel? You know, that spine of yours that isn't from one particular age of yourself even. But like rings in a tree, you hold yourself as the implication of this whole journey now. And what if that's the story of our humanity? No more getting further. We're the outcome of all this. And if we honor that, then we realize we're all ancient. So let's stop arguing about who knows more and start saying we're all art. And that's why it's difficult. It's so painful, because art doesn't leave anything overlooked if it's beautiful art and the human species is beautiful art.
Well, you haven't left anything overlooked. Everything is painted. I actually didn't mention yet. I could go on. I didn't mention the piano is painted with art. The couch is painted with art, as the chairs are, and even the vases and all of these, everything has been painted, and everything has taken on a whole other dimension. And you might be thinking, as you're listening to this, I wish I could see this. And you might be able to, actually. You might be invited to come and experience this. If you go to leigh mcclosky.com, and I'll spell that again, it's leighmcclosky.com, leighmcclosky.com, and you could sign up there, and you can also learn about the workshops and the books, and you can go to Google and Google Leigh McCloskey, and you can go to YouTube and YouTube Leigh McCloskey, and you can also find him on Facebook. And maybe you too could be one of the now many people that have been in this room that have given to the experience and gotten from the experience. And I am proud to say I am now amongst them as well. And so with that, we'll come back for some final thoughts with our guest, Leigh McCloskey, tonight. And you mentioned so much your work on the tarot, and since that's something also that so many people don't understand, I wonder, from your way of explaining, and you have books on it, I know, and people can find that at leighmcclosky.com as well, but maybe you can share from your perspective a little bit of the tarot and help us make sense of that.
Sure.
If you would, when we come back here on Life Changes with
Are you achieving your highest potential? Do you know what that looks like? Louise Ashby Life Coaching makes it a mission to bring balance and abundance to every area of your life, giving you the opportunity to do and be all that you've dreamed. Anything is possible if you just believe. Contact author and motivational speaker Louise Ashby for your complimentary session and see if her individualized style is for you. You can email Louise at louiseashby.org. That's louiseashby.org. Or telephone 323-592-3181. That's Louise at louiseashby.org. Or telephone 323-592-3181. Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page.
Well, we're here in what our guest Leigh McCloskey calls the mind ship, as opposed to a spaceship. Although I have a spaceship kind of feeling.
Yes.
I probably should ask you to really quickly describe that's not possible. So for those who are going to see the video, behind us is a painting that we don't have time to talk about, actually, because we just have a few more minutes, and I do want to talk about, and this, I know, requires so much, because we need to honor what it is. But not that tarot is any less simple, but
well, the tarot, you talk about the archetypes of the tarot and understanding. Actually, I can throw in the Phoenix Arise painting because it will...
Which is behind us.
And I did a TEDx talk on Phoenix Arise and the blossoming of creation, which is well worth the 10 minutes to watch.
Which you can find
My website on the link, or you can YouTube it, yeah. Google it. But one of the stories that I was always interested in was this sense of the theater of the psyche. Why are we composed of so many different voices? And I always joke that, you know, when people would say, be yourself, I always thought, well, which one? You know, there are so many of me's. You know, it was like it's morning, afternoon, self. And I started to understand that the human psyche is usually squeezed into I'm this and I'm not that.
Right.
And the gift with acting is because you are embodying psychology that's completely different than your own. It's actually opening up your field of vision. You're starting to say, oh, humans are based upon the assumption that I'm this and I'm not that. And then it becomes very unconscious. And so this is what a character really is built upon as well. I assume I'm this and I assume I am not that. And to a great degree, this is the tarot. We can look at this as 22 tuning forks, 22 characters in the theater of the psyche, each role expressing a different note or a different key. And really, you can look at it as a piano keyboard, meaning that what it's trying to teach us, and this was the ancient mysteries and the schools and the traditions, were saying that if you think your psychology, your experiential self, will figure this out, you will go mad. Because you are a tree that is growing vertically. The winds of time are passing by you, but you are much more ancient than you think. So to connect to this ancient pattern knowing, you must begin to understand that there are keys, there are tools that will act as triggers for the creative imagination. And not fantasy, but imagination was the key, meaning that which allowed this inner conversation to occur. And that's why the tarot, you can look at, tarot means wheel, but essentially you can sit yourself in the middle of the wheel. This is what I do when I
which you actually painted.
Yes, and I have the wheel as a demonstration because I want us to sit in the center, at the hub, and to realize that we could say that we've been moving in a direction. And so these two eyes have been defining who we think we are as a sense of direction and getting there. And I will get there. I will be complete. The tarot says, no, you are complete. You have this operating system. So if you can understand that you are, of course, moving in the outer wheel, you are moving in time and circumstance. These are weathers, like seasons, and they're conditioning you. But what we're trying to do is get you to stand as the actor in the center of the wheel and not over-identify with any of the particular keys and notes. And this is why it's saying that as we can stand in the center of our experience being human, it's not who are the good guys, who are the bad guys, any more than you would look at a Shakespearean play and saying, oh, we can do without the bad guys. You say, well, no, actually, this is alchemical. Mm. It's not that the bad guys are real. They're the alchemy that draws forth the heroic. If you do not like what you are encountering and you cannot challenge it on its own terms, you must create a language that allows you to dissolve resistance. And this is why these are very important mental tools, because they help us to have a conversation with the psyche itself and to create role relationships within the psyche that allow essentially the voice of the empress or emperor, which you could say the voice of love and the voice of form, to rise up and actually, in a way, with the same imaginative story you would as an actor. You can't play the King of England. You're not the King of England. But you can imaginatively hear that king within you. And if you start to understand that that's not just making it up, it is just making it up on one level, but this is actually the tooling of the creative imagination. Because when something becomes art, it does not become belief. It becomes that which transcends belief. It jumps from belief and says, now you're ready for a relationship. The other was just studying. And so I really feel in the black and white keys of my tarot, it's saying, listen, these 22 tuning forks are within each of us. When you stepped into your wheel, you struck those tuning forks and they created unique octaves, unique ranges, and they're just as human as mine are, but they're uniquely different. So realize our two eyes understand the world of form and we agree with these things, but now we can turn around, full circle. That's what the room is saying. Mm. We can understand we're an environment of perception not a direction of perception.
Almost as if sometimes I'm this and sometimes I'm this, yes. Or I have an aspect of myself that is this way and this way as well.
Because otherwise we're thinking we're not it. It's there. It's down the road. It's in the other room. Think of self-reflection. If I could get into that other room, if I could get into what I see myself reflected in, then I would have it. But we get to the mirror and we find it's flat. It has no depth. And self-reflection only goes so far. Mm. And that's where the wheel says, so turn away from self-reflection, mirror self-reflection. And to know yourself deeply, sometimes you have to dive deeper than mere reflection. And this is when we dive back into, oh, I'm not a human experiencing partial psychology. I'm experiencing human psychology in a unique expression. And that's when we understand we are artists of creation. And that's what the art books that line the walls saying. We're so curious. We're so fascinated with this question of who are we? What are we capable of? We want this, like an electron, to continue to explore all of its infinite possibilities. And that's why the Tarot is saying this will give you the mythic and archetypal structure, the patterning that reminds you you are ancient. So trust the piano you've been given. Play a bit more. You'll understand the language of the imagination is not something to be afraid of, but it's a friend that is saying, now that you can put the fear aside, let's have a conversation.
And what a conversation was had.
Yeah.
And one that cannot end here and does not end here, but maybe starts here for some of us.
Yeah.
And though you and I started a conversation long before, probably centuries.
Yes. Our roots are quite deep.
I'm glad we're continuing it now, and I'm glad we're sharing it with our audience. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This is and the tarot, we hadn't planned on speaking about that, and we hadn't talked about it, but I knew you would have a way of explaining it that was like no other way I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And so I look forward to more of your explaining and to more of your books and your workshops and all of that. And I look forward to coming back here soon.
I do too as well. Yeah. Be inspired and know that we are being mentored by those things that are seemingly frustrating us are mentoring us. They're saying, let go. You're more interesting than you think.
Let go. You're more interesting than you think. Well, I don't know if anybody will ever be this interesting, at least in this aspect. But that's not where they're supposed to be interesting. They're supposed to be interesting in the aspect that is them.
Exactly.
So with that, from this mind shift, I am Filippo Voltaggio, thanking all of you for joining us on this journey here with our guest Lee McCloskey, and signing off for now and reminding you, as your life changes, for that matter, as my life changes, let's be here for each other. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Change the world.